Lake Effect Weekend continues now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. With a title like Disobedience, you might expect a film full of intense conflict. And while there certainly is conflict, it's much more internal, depicted through the lives of the two main characters.
In a conversation with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, film critic and Lake Effect contributor Dave Lurson introduces us to the world of the film.
In Disobedience, Ronit, a successful New York photographer, returns home to London after learning of her father's death. Her old friend David offers to put her up during her stay, arousing what looks like jealousy from his wife, Esty. Esty even seems moved to pay David renewed attention in light of Ronit's appearance, but competition over David isn't where the plot is heading.
Disobedience is what I think a beautifully tense tale of forbidden love in a small Jewish Orthodox community in North London, I believe. And as your review alludes to, it's between the two best friends from girlhood, played by Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. So with your first impressions of the film, I've seen multiple stances. Either it's poignant or it's simple and bleak. What's your impression?
Both. It's not either or. Simple, what's wrong with that? Bleak, that's part of reality. Poignant, yes. I think it's all these things. I think it's a marvelously constructed screenplay. I haven't read the novel on which this is based, so I can't compare it. But the screenplay does great work in bringing out the plot bit by bit. It doesn't dump a whole lot of exposition on the viewer right away. You begin to learn little by little what the relations are between the three main characters in the film. I also like the work of the director, Sebastian Lelio, who, of course, we know from his Oscar-winning movie of last year, Fantastic Woman, one of the, I don't know about the first, but certainly the most prominent transgender film out there. He uses the color and the hues and the almost the texture, if you can talk a film in that way, to great effect. I think maybe reinforcing the idea of bleakness and of poignancy.
Well, and of the restrained nature of the community and also the relationships that these women have had to hold back all these years.
Right. One thing about, you know, there are actually a great many movies I've seen lately set in Orthodox Jewish milieus of one kind or other in Israel or in particularly in New York City. This might be the first one I've seen set in London, but it really doesn't make too much difference. You could have moved the story to Brooklyn, and you could have had Ronette, played by Rachel Weisz, you know, who ran away and moved to Manhattan. It could have been really the same story. One of the advantages of setting a movie in an Orthodox Jewish milieu or something similar to that is the very definite sense of borders around the community. It's an enclosed community in some respects. It's kind of like setting a movie on a moving train. I mean, people are kind of stuck together in a certain sense. And there's also the advantage of a very ancient, well-developed sense of tradition. It's hard to think of any other group of people in the United States, certainly comparable to this, maybe the Amish, and there haven't been a whole lot of real Amish movies.
Right.
I mean, again, an enclosed community, it's its own unique set of values and traditions, in some ways minimal, you know, exchange with people from the outside. These kinds of settings, I think, are very useful to a storyteller and a filmmaker.
Do you think that this film was also a respectful and sufficiently immersive approach into an example of a Jewish Orthodox community? Because sometimes films don't hit the mark with that.
Right. I mean, you have to be very careful about the outsider making fun of things, perhaps, or attacking things that the outsider does not understand or have a good sense for. I don't think that the movie caricatures the community it represents. I think particularly, you know, the main characters in the film are very sympathetic. We understand their particular points of view. I think we can feel along with them their responses to what's going on. The secondary characters, I think the film, the screenplay definitely avoids the danger of caricature.
The trio of leads that we have, Rachel Weisz as Ronit, Rachel McAdams as Esty, and Alessandro Nivola as David, First, before we get to the power of the Rachels, I do want to talk about Nivola. And I was really impressed by his performance. You know, I think all of them show a quiet complexity to each performance. But him in particular as the, you know, the these are three people who have a long history of knowing each other through childhood and beyond.
Right. Yeah, I would hesitate to say who has the more difficult role of the three. I think it's really a trilogy of people whose performances, of actors whose performances mutually support each other and the whole project in a very believable way. He is they all really kind of have to come to terms with where they are in life, what they are going to do, how to act upon the beliefs that they have, the beliefs they have been raised with, the interesting kind of family dynamic, because it should be said that Rana, the Rachel Weisz character, her father was the rabbi and a much esteemed figure in the Jewish community of London. He never had a son, and Dovid was kind of the son he never had. He mentored Dovid very closely. Dovid has been groomed to be the successor to Ronit's father. And so you have, you know, this additional level of complexity. In some ways, Dovid is actually closer to Ronit's father than she was.
Yeah, she wasn't even in his will as she came back to kind of put things in order with that. And with Rachel Weisz, I believe she does a great job of showing the conflict of the split existence of her character.
Right. A very telling scene early on. We meet her in New York at a photo shoot, and suddenly, very early in the movie, about three minutes into it perhaps, the news of her father's death reaches her, and she tears her garment in the Orthodox Jewish tradition of mourning at the news of the death of a loved one. And there is this pull between the tradition that she was part of and her rejection of that, or partial rejection of that. I think, again, it's another facet of this film that makes it very interesting and more than simply a one-dimensional kind of good guy, bad guy sort of terrible Hollywood movie. This would have been a very bad Hollywood movie, I think, if it had come through the normal spigot of how these kinds of movies are made.
Right. I do want to touch upon that, but before we do, with Rachel McAdams and her performance, her character is, you know, I don't want to necessarily say naturally muted, but women in Orthodox Jewish communities have certain roles. And although her actions and perhaps her dialogue is not as in the forefront, I think her eyes and the subtleties that she portrays really makes a great performance, even if she doesn't have a lot of a script to say.
Right. I mean, I think that don't we think of Rachel McAdams as a comedian, right? I mean, that's kind of how she broke through. And this is not the first, serious role in her career, but I think it does speak to her range as an actor. Yes, she expresses herself very, very much through her facial expressions. I'll jump in and say that in my experience, women of that community are not necessarily passive. There are particular roles, but oftentimes the men are very much immersed in scholarship, and the women actually take charge of business and other kinds of activities. In her case, we see a bit of that. She's teaching at the Orthodox school in London. She finds that to be quite fulfilling. Her marriage to Dovid, it's not terrible. It's not entirely fulfilling either. So she's this interesting, partially fulfilled, but not entirely happy person, because an important part of herself really is not allowed to come to the surface.
Right, and people don't go to this film unless they're completely unaware of what it's about. You know, they don't go to be surprised. You go to watch the struggle of all the characters and the buildup.
Right, right.
With the Hollywood approach that you alluded to earlier, this movie is also produced by Rachel Weisz, and I wanted to touch upon the importance of a female-produced, female-centered queer film. It was a film that was made specifically without, quote, the male gaze, because Rachel Weisz has said in interviews that she is tired of acting in movies that have this repeat button, I suppose we could say.
Well, I think it's very important, and it is happening. You know, a couple of years ago, I would say it was happening little by little in an evolutionary way. But I think that we've seen astonishing social developments in the past year or two. The hashtag MeToo movement is driving a great many things. And yeah, the male gaze, well, what can we do about the male gaze except to say that there should be a female gaze represented just as well, that you know, men have perspectives, women have perspectives, and not all men have the same perspective, not all women have the same perspective. But what we need in our culture today is a multiplicity of perspectives that we can learn from and understand and see how complicated reality really is and how same situation can be viewed in so many different ways by different people of different backgrounds.
With the success of films like Call Me By Your Name and Love, Simon, the first commercial, you know, gay story, it seems as though filmmakers are finally coming around to the complexities and nuances of homosexual relationships between men. But do you think that with female films like Carol and Disobedience, who maybe might want people wanting more and a better thorough representation, especially for gay women out there who are seeing these films, do you think that it's just as the Me Too movement is finally pushing the scale towards getting more female representation behind the camera with these movies, it'll still take some time before the female stories are told in a more popular, in a not necessarily better way, but with greater commonality?
Well, I think that the success of Disobedience, and I don't really know about box office success. It was a fairly crowded screening when I saw it here in Milwaukee. I think the movie is doing quite well. I mean, in terms of what a film, what's called an indie film, would do. It's getting very good critical reviews. I think that it will be a door opener in the sense that here's an example of a movie on this subject that can find an audience, not just a LGBTQ audience, but a wider audience on the basis of quality. I mean, again, good screenplay, good acting, a good cast, good directing. If this same movie had been done badly, that would not be a step forward. And you can imagine many ways in which this movie could have been done badly. Another thing I have to say about it, I think, is that it avoids melodrama. There's an emotional subtlety to it, which I think leaves a deeper and longer impression on most people than if this was just, you know, some operatic, melodramatic kind of scenario, which it could have lent itself to.
Do you think this could have been successful with its release, with the power and the reputation, had Rachel Weisz not been a star and producer?
There's a very good chance we would not be talking about it. There's a very good chance it would never have opened in Milwaukee. Maybe it would have had two screenings at a film festival somewhere, and that would have been the extent of it. I mean, again, the reality is that star power does count. I mean, many people know who Rachel Weisz is. She's talented. People have seen her in other movies. She's a person who can attract media attention. People want to interview her and hear what she has to say. And if it was just, Jane Doe in that same kind of role, well, you know, the movie might have been made, but the distribution for it would have been much smaller in scale.
With the impact it leaves on audiences, I also enjoy the fact that this film is not a film about preaching or judgment. It kind of leaves it open to interpretation.
Right. I think that the ending of the film is not, you know, in stone. We don't exactly know. I hope there's not a sequel to it in a way, but there could kind of be a sequel to it because it's not entirely clear to me after seeing it one time where the three people are going to go in the future.
Well, for anyone on the fence about taking a trip to see this film, what would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend that you should see it, even if the topic of two women rediscovering the love for each other, if that's not a topic that particularly interests you, it's still a very well-made movie. And I think it tells a very human story in a believable setting. It has all the check off the list of things that I would say count toward a good movie. It's a quality cinema-going experience.
All right, Dave. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Larson is arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express newspaper and one of our regular film contributors. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski about the film Disobedience.